Welcome, Chelsea fans, to another edition of the Lab from Matthew Harden podcast. I'm your host, Shane Holcomb. I'm excited to be back once again behind the microphone after a typical chaotic December period from the Blues. Since the pod's last episode, a little bit over 30 days ago, Ben Chilwell, unfortunately, has suffered a season-ending ACL tear. Reece James with a thigh injury, putting him out for the near future. COVID has made its way throughout all of Cobham. Romelu Lukaku has lost a significant amount of support from the Blues fans, and Chelsea have gone from top of the table to 10 points behind Manchester City. A typical Chelsea, right, Dan? I'm buzzing to be joined today. I kind of gave away right there, but one of my favorite Blues content creators and journalist for Football.London, that is Daniel Childs. Dan, I think we talked at the beginning of November, if my recollection is correct, and per usual, in a short span of times, many things have happened for the club we cherish. Turks, first of all, thanks for coming back on the pod today. How's everything going, mate?
Yeah, really good. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I mean, the more things change, the more they stay the same in the world of Chelsea, especially who could have predicted a slight winter collapse, not a full winter collapse at the time of speaking. It actually looks like we're kind of going to break that cycle this year under Tuchel with some decent performances against Spurs, obviously in the League Cup, and things looking slightly more positive in recent weeks. But yeah, it's not breaking news that chaotic things happen at Chelsea Football Club, is it? I mean, it's just kind of normal. You kind of be a bit concerned if we went through December and nothing happened, because you'd be concerned that something awful was around the corner. So doing well, excited to speak about the team, because I think Tuchel's actually doing some really interesting things at the moment with the team. And looking ahead to the future. So I think there's some interesting topics to get into.
Yeah. I think, you know, as well, Chelsea fans, everyone just take a deep breath, okay? We're still in five competitions, Premier League. We just went into the final of the EFL Cup last night, won the FA Cup convincingly, champions. We've got the Club World Cup coming up, which we haven't added to our trophy cabinet yet. Wouldn't it be amazing to see that nice gold chest on our jersey for the remainder of the season? That's what I really want to see. But yeah, I mean, there's positives and there's negatives in every situation, Dan. But I'm going to try to be a little bit optimistic on this podcast today, especially because it's a little bit of my return. There's been some positives in the past weeks. You know, there has been so much chaos. I mentioned the injuries to Reece James and Ben Chilwell, but the squad stepped up. Tuchel's done bits in training, it looks like. And there's been a lot of positives, like I said, from thrashing Spurs in the Cup semifinal. That was brilliant. The team looks confident again. Towards the end of December, we saw a lack of being able to put an opponent away. But towards the beginning of January, and especially after that Liverpool draw back at Stamford Bridge only a little bit of a week ago, the team's confidence seems to be soaring at this time of the season. That's a good thing, because this is really where we're going to be playing so many matches, especially I mentioned the Club World Cup coming up, Daniel. So there's so many positives from reaching another cup final. Thomas Tuchel, I think it's four now cup finals that he's advanced Chelsea into. And he hasn't been here for a year, Daniel. I think a week to today, he'll be at Chelsea Football Club for 365 days. Just brilliant what he's done. So what were your takeaways from that EFL Cup semifinal? Because we basically controlled it all throughout those 180 minutes. Of course, Antonio Conte coming back to Stamford Bridge. And the irony, I think this was Mediano tweeted it last night, the irony of Thomas Tuchel using a system that Antonio Conte thrived in at Chelsea and beating him down with it over these past 108 minutes was brilliant to see. But did your thoughts on advancing to the Carabao Cup final, one we haven't been in a couple of years?
Obviously, it's great always, you know, reaching a cup final. But, you know, we do reach a lot of these finals, especially in recent years. It's quite ridiculous when you sort of delve into the numbers since like 04, how many finals Chelsea have reached. And I saw a tweet that was going through all the years, and that wasn't even saying like just one cup final. There could have been like two or three in those years, but the amount of years in the past 15 or 16, I can't count. You know, it's quite ridiculous. The irony of, you know, Conte, who looked, other than sort of being quite animated over the VAR decisions, which were all correct, he looked bemused. He looked sort of ponderous on the sideline. And, you know, there was lots of, for me, harking back to that second season under Conte, where he looked clueless, you know.
Looks tired.
You know, and he's only, 3 months into life at Spurs, probably less than that even. And I think just probably shows you the job he's got there. That's not a surprise to anyone, but you know, you do wonder if there's anything going on in his mind of looking across to Tuchel, seeing the performance that Chelsea put out with a really progressive, you know, system, and seeing that there's a sense of excitement under Thomas Tuchel. And, you know, Conte was once that figure. You know, he was once that figure in 16, 17 at Chelsea. Fans were rallying behind, singing his name consistently. There was a feeling that he could replicate something similar to Jose Mourinho. Because that, you know, Jose is the benchmark. And now Tuchel is that figure and maybe could make something longer lasting than Conte did. But you've got to be pleased because, you know, once you, the League Cup is a weird competition because it's, I feel once you get to the last eight, you take it seriously. It's a third and fourth round at Chelsea. I've got knocked out in recent years.
If you don't
get past the fourth round, no one's crying about it at the end of the season. But if you get to this stage, it does impact your season. It's quite weird that, you know, being knocked out in the early rounds of the FA Cup seems to have more of an impact, doesn't it? I don't know if it's because it's closer to the end of the season or just because the FA Cup, I think, has more significance, especially to English football fans in terms of its history and feeling like more of a bigger competition and more significance. But it's massive, I think, because it's just that rolling cycle of feeling like we're moving forward with Thomas Tuchel. And especially, I don't know if we'll come on to this. I don't know if we ever have any questions about this, but there is a sense that the title race might be over. You know, Chelsea may not have sort of the ability to catch up Man City. So then if we're sort of accepting in January, which is a little bit depressing, but you know, if you're accepting in January that the likelihood is Man City will win the title again, what are we getting from this season? Because you don't just want it to be to fall back into the trap of the last three or four seasons where all it is qualifying for the Champions League. And I think Tuchel, maybe it's just the way he is. Maybe it's a sense within the club that there needs to be something from the season where we can go into next year feeling even more confident. I think part of that is winning the domestic cups, is feeling like we're moving in an exciting direction, playing good football, him trying new formations. And very much you hope the League Cup is the start of this because, you know, Man City have had a firm grip on the League Cup in recent years. Won it four times in a row. Thanks to West Ham, that isn't going to be the case this year. So psychologically, if Chelsea can take any motivation, if they win the League Cup in February, of saying, okay, that's one of Man City's recent dominant things that we've taken off the table. You know, beat them in a Champions League final. We beat them in the FA Cup. You know, all these things you hope are leading towards us overthrowing them in the title race, you know, eventually. So there is that. I just think that for Tuchel, he knows at Chelsea, it's about winning trophies and it's about accumulating them as quickly as possible. Yeah. He knows only trophies are going to buy him more time, which is what a lot of supporters want him to get. And I just think the way he's managed the past 2 weeks, I think, has been brilliant. You know, the way he handled the Lukaku situation, I don't know how much you want to get into that, because I'm probably in a very, very small minority of people who didn't lose my head about that and could actually see what Lukaku was saying and didn't think it was the end of the world. But I do think the way Tuchel acted and reacted to that situation, I think, has only increased his sense of control over the squad and the feeling that he's only come out of that situation with more power. When in previous years, I think there would have been a sense that that would have weakened his power. Previous coaches, that would have weakened their stance. So I think the new year after a pretty dismal December, I think has really been pleasantly surprising, especially compared to last January, which is really depressing. So hopefully this is one sign of a really good end to the season for Chelsea in the Champions League and FA Cup and Club World Cup, as you mentioned there. There's still a lot to be won in this season. It's not done.
Yeah, we do have some questions and we'll get it down to the line where I think someone asked about, you know, what will a successful season be for Chelsea come the end of May? But I think it's a great point that you brought up, you know, the fact that Thomas Tuchel has been accumulating all these trophies. He's got a great opportunity now in a cup final at Wembley to kind of have some redemption. I know it's a different competition, but from the FA Cup loss last season. And seeing the players hold a trophy, whatever it might be, is always a good feeling. And it gives the team confidence. Like you said, I think that February period is kind of a cool thing about the Carabao Cup. You win a trophy in February, you still have a couple of months left in the season, but you bring that confidence forward into the latter parts of the Champions League, FA Cup, and Premier League, saying, okay, you know, we have a cup competition. Maybe even the Club World Cup will be in your locker by then too. So it's all about confidence, I think, for this team going forward. And for those guys to be winning trophies and have achievements in their Chelsea career. So going forward now in the December months, of course, we struggled a little bit to be frank, but our midfield is starting to slowly come back healthy. Of course, the January transfer market will always do its bits with noise. And in my opinion, I would scrap the January transfer market. I just hate the noise around it. I hate the negativity around, you know, a current squad in a crucial point of the season. And especially, I think, in the Chelsea community, there's a lot of that. But what are your thoughts, you know, getting our midfield back healthy, especially perfect timing for this Manchester City game on Saturday, which we'll get into a little bit later. I saw a mad stat on Twitter today. Let me pull this up real quick. And it's about Jorginho and Kovacic, who, of course, have had, you know, a good partnership during their Chelsea career. Let me pull this up. It's been 18 months since Chelsea lost last game with both Jorginho and Kovacic on the pitch for the whole 90 minutes. So, I mean, you know, I think this is going to be, for me, more of an appreciation podcast than, you know, looking at reinforcements coming in the summer. Because I know, of course, that is an area of need, but I think we need to appreciate the core of our team, which is, in my opinion, you know, that midfield who are getting back healthy. I know I might be in the middle of the minority by that, but, you know, a guy like Jorginho Kovacic, we got to give some more praise to. Of course, Kova has that brilliant masterclass against Liverpool. But a guy, you know, like Jorginho, I think needs to get some more credit for his workload in the system, his importance to Thomas Tuchel in the squad. But, of course, it's great to have our engine man N'Golo Kante back. We're going to have to keep him up for these big games going forward. We know that, but we know his significance. We know that he makes Chelsea 10 times better when he plays. And we're going to hopefully see him on Saturday morning, Daniel. So what are your thoughts on Mitchell coming back for a really important time of the season? Because only really 2-3 weeks ago, we were playing a guy like Choloba in midfield. And there was a lot of weirdness in how Thomas Tuchel put his squad together, because whether it was not having five defenders or not having two midfielders, it always seemed to be a little wonky. But he got the job done, and now he's got his midfield first 4-5 squad in the squad back. What are your thoughts on that going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's massively important. I think the player that stands out the most, who's had, I think, the biggest impact this season and the biggest impact since returning, is Mateo Kovacic. Yep. And I feel like if you're talking about a player I think we need to highlight for praise, is Kovacic, yep, because this has undeniably been his best season at Chelsea.
Yeah. Better than his player of the year season 2 years ago.
Yeah, simply because the influence he has in a final third. I don't think anyone should feel guilty now of turning around and saying, oh, you know, I was wrong about him with Kovacic, because the stats are still there. The performances that have at times disappointed me and others are still there. It's the fact that Kovacic has gone up to another level this year. I think he's particularly what he does in the final third. I think the problem with Kovacic has always been, and I remember saying this on my YouTube channel even before we permanently signed him, so it kind of shows you how long this has been, that technically he's one of the most gifted players you're going to see, especially for a central midfielder in the modern game. I feel it becomes a bit of a meme, but it is true, you know, him being a press resistant player, him being able to get out of tight areas, him being able to dribble into really dangerous positions in the pitch. But the problem has always been that decision making once he gets there. It feels like he's a really good middle player, but can, as a number eight, as a number six, can he add that final touch to his game to score more goals, to contribute, to create chances? And the numbers just show that he's so far better than he has been in recent years. I think you have to give some praise to Tuchel. I mean, I know my colleague at Football London, Adam Newson, has done pieces breaking down the numbers. And his sort of theory is that Tuchel has kind of really streamlined his game in a sense that, you know, he basically stopped doing the stuff that isn't really impacting us on the pitch. You know, you have great attributes in my system. Let's try and put you in a way and give you instructions to get the best out of that. And that's, I think, simplicity is probably the best part of Kovacic's season, is that there is a sense that when he gets the ball, he is being efficient with that ball. And I remember seeing it in pre-season. I was at the Spurs game, if people remember that. And in that first half, him and Kante as a double six, I just remember Kovacic certain times just picking up the ball and as quickly as he could driving the ball forward, which is what Tuchel wants. He wants that ball moving quickly forward at, you know, at a rapid rate. He doesn't like the idea of the ball being passed sideways, you know, just the same as we do as fans. You know, you hate seeing the balls just being recycled just aimlessly constantly. And that has been a problem for Chelsea over recent years. So Kovacic, since he's come back, has been wonderful. And it's great to see that injury didn't knock him back. You've got to remember as well, this guy had COVID as he was coming back from injury. So that knocked his return even further back, which would have been demoralizing. And the goal against Liverpool, I mean, was just ridiculous. But The goal in itself, of course, is freakish and incredible. The performance against Liverpool was outstanding. I mean, you're talking about some ridiculous stats there. I mean, I think if I remember rightly, neither him or Kante committed a foul against Liverpool. I think, you know, there were even more incredible stats, maybe not even being tackled. I can't remember. There was some.
I don't think they didn't lose possession. I don't think
that's the one. Yeah. So they, especially against a team of Liverpool's caliber who press, it's just, you know, for me, it's incredible to see how he's developed this season and come on. And I think I do wonder if some of that has to do with maybe the pressure of, say, a Saunders coming in on loan and maybe Kovacic potentially seeing Ruben come back as well into the fray of a preseason and realizing that I can't just rest on my laurels here. I've got to step up if I want to keep my place in the first team, especially for a majority of the season where Tuchel's only playing two central midfielders. So it really limits down the options for those players of how they're going to get in the first team. So it's firstly that. Jorginho, I don't have as much to say on Jorginho because, you know, I feel like Kovacic, for me, there's always been a confusion over what his best role is. What is he actually offering to the team? I think that has been much more refined, thankfully, this year. You can see him having a longer-term future now at Stamford Bridge. Jorginho has always been Jorginho. You know, you've always known what he excels at. And I felt sorry for him during December because he was absolutely shattered. I mean, and it kind of speaks to maybe Tuchel not having the greatest trust with Saunders, which now seeing Saunders' recovery over recent weeks, you wonder, in reflection, could we have brought Sal in a little bit earlier to just give... I particularly remember the Brighton game where Jorginho had his worst performance of the season, but he looked dead, you know, from like the first half, like a lot of Chelsea players did that night. I think they just run out of energy and Georgie was being asked to play week in, well, not even week in, week out, you know, every few days. And the intensity of it was clearly getting to him. But generally, he's had a good season. And Kante, obviously, it's that big thing of keeping him fit. If Chelsea can keep N'Golo Kante fit for the rest of the season, I think Chelsea can win the Champions League. I think we can win the FA Cup. I think we can win the League Cup. I think we can win the Club World Cup. I think we can get closer to Man City. Yeah. That he is still the difference, I think, in this squad. He is still the player that is irreplaceable. He is still the player that takes this midfield up to levels that no one else can. And, you know, it's credit to Kovacic that against Liverpool, you felt like Kovacic was reaching N'Golo Kante levels of brilliance. But Kante is still the gem, isn't he? He's still the one player that you think is so crucial to Chelsea's success and failure, which is something, you know, I know we want to be optimistic in this podcast, but it's something that you feel like Chelsea are going to have to address at some point because he's getting older, his injuries are piling up. There needs to be an alternative.
His contract too runs out next summer, doesn't it?
Yeah. Same with Jorginho, you know, the same. I think they both, Kante and Jorginho's
2023.
End at the same time. So, but that's for another day. I think I agree with you. The general consensus of this is that there is so much obsession about transfers. And listen, in my job, I'm asked to write about transfers. And listen, transfers are fun. You know, I'm not a big, you know, proponent of saying that and trying to be edgy and say, oh, transfers are horrible and you know, you should feel ashamed for liking them. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm interested in Chelsea playing well. I'm interested in Chelsea winning games. And I think you should appreciate the players you have. And that's maybe not in relation to Kovacic, Jorginho and Kante and other players within his squad that I think Tuchel has got the best out of. But, you know, the implementation of youth products in this team, you know, it's making you realise that you don't always have to spend 90 million to solve your problems. And there are players within this team who maybe, like Kovacic, who I doubted, who I felt, I'm not quite sure if this guy's got a long-term future at Stamford Bridge unless he really improves. He has improved and maybe that is going to provide a solution for Tuchel instead of going out there and spending even more in the market. So praise for Kovacic. I think he's the outstanding one this season. Fingers crossed on Kante's fitness because he's a game changer. And Jorginho, he's very much, I think he's playing for extra now in terms of his hopefully, Chelsea career.
For me too, it's like hopefully we can give Jorginho some rest in these next couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was good to see him get some time off. In these past couple games, not playing, you know, the full 90 minutes like you said he was towards that back end in December, because there was so much fatigue in the squad because we didn't have too much depth in that position, and not even the fact that we don't have quality depth, it's the fact that we didn't have the players. You know, I think that one of my favorite quotes of the season so far was, I think maybe it was against Spurs, Tuchel was like, they asked him, you know, why did he change to a back four? He was like, because we didn't have five defenders. So And this kind of leads nicely to my next situation, because there, of course, are two injuries to two of our most influential players this season. And it's kind of heartbreaking, Reece James and Ben Chilwell, to be frank with you. And I had this on my agenda, but Pat Larson's also asking about the Wimbeck situation, and what would we both do to resolve it. It's just a shame, because they were some of the most influential players to the system, the Thomas Tuchel system, and they probably would be thriving in this new kind of way that Chelsea seemed to be playing over these past 2 weeks. So it's heartbreaking for Chilwell. Hopefully we can have Reece James back in maybe the next, 3-4 weeks heading into February. But it's still crushing for a guy like Ben Chilwell. And we've seen players like Hudson-Odoi, Puistic at times fill in at those quote-unquote win-back roles. But if you are Marina Gravis' guy at this moment, Daniel Childs, Pat Larson's asking you, what would you do to resolve the current injury situation in the win-back position? Would you keep on going forward with the likes of Alonso? Of course, we have someone like Aspasquits who can fill in. Puistic, Hudson-Odoi did a little bit of a job there against a less press-resistant Spurs team last night. Or would you go out into the market and try to resolve that situation for the end of the season?
I think it's just a difficult situation. I mean, I could criticize maybe the recruitment over a longer period of time, that Chelsea then don't have adequate replacements for profiles like Chilwell and James, so that, that is still a problem I think Tuchel's dealing with the current squad, is that there still are players who were bought under different coaches who maybe don't quite fit what Tuchel wants in a fullback or a wingback. And especially this year, I think you've seen, Marcus Alonso, actually, to his credit, at the time of recording and saying this, I think he had a really good performance against, I think it was Spurs, and he showed some really good signs against, there was kind of that sense against Liverpool that there was new energy about the team. But we can't deny, especially defensively, that, Alonso, and I think that Alonso just looks like a player who at times isn't quite with the rhythm, of the team, the speed of the team. I think that the speed of play that Chilwell and James, especially Chilwell on that left, with really good a chemistry those two players have had since like last March in the Champions League run. It's just difficult. So I feel Emerson, I know people don't like the idea of Emerson. Listen, I think my personal opinion is it is a little bit demoralizing to see Emerson become a solution for Chelsea, because he shouldn't be. It doesn't feel like a progressive move. It doesn't feel like the squad is moving forward in any sort of sustainable way. But we are in an emergency situation. I mean, if the last time we did this podcast, I don't think any of us would have sat here and gone, yeah, Chelsea going to need a new wing back in January. It was probably one of the last places we would have looked. I think Marina and probably the club and all of us were thinking mainly January is going to be dominated by, can we keep Antonio Rudiger and Andreas Christensen? That's, that was going to kind of be the main thing, but it hasn't turned. That of course is still an issue, but it's kind of a side issue now. The whole thing is about the wing back. And I feel January is such a risky month where Chelsea, I don't want Chelsea spending 20 million on a player that we never really planned to buy. I feel like Emerson is the best of, and maybe this is where Tuchel is feeling as well, because he knows the player. He worked with him last year. He used him in interesting ways last year as well. He was a very fringe figure, true, but just a body in there that he knows and he knows feels comfortable at Chelsea just for 4 months. And then we get to the summer and we reevaluate, because then there's going to be more options, as always is the case in the summer. And do we bring back Ian Matson from Coventry and Tuchel sees how he does in the system? And maybe we have a Trevor Chalobah revelation again over pre-season. Or do we go out in the market? And if we are to go out in the market in the summer, I think the one rule has to be you have to find someone similar to Chilwell. You have to find someone who provides similar attributes to the system as Ben Chilwell. So then if you have a situation again where Chilwell is out for a suspension or injury, you're not bringing in another player who completely does the opposite or has limitations that you just can't really get around. Because even putting Callum there and Pulisic there, it seems more... For me, it seems more maybe suitable than Alonso and Dave, in terms of these are speedy wingers who you feel like can bomb down the wing, but they do have defensive flaws within them, even though I think Callum's defensive game has improved. And I think Pulisic's defensive performance against Aston Villa was pretty impressive when he went to right wing back. But those are, I think it's not great for those two players to be used as wing backs for half a season. that's kind of a longer term thing for me. So my solution is, I think Emerson, which is the way I think Tuchel wants to go, is probably the best case scenario. And listen, I don't, unless Emerson turns out to be a wonderful solution and surprises us all, I don't think he should be here beyond 4 months. You'd hope that Chelsea can find a, because the thing that probably is annoying Marina is, and probably annoying Chelsea is that this, he was on the way out. You know, there was a likelihood he was going to stay at Lyon till the end of the season, and then they were going to buy him permanently. And that would have been one of the players that we were trying to get off the books. Is this going to make that situation more difficult in the summer? Maybe, but we can't just not act. You know, there's just, with COVID and the injury situation, you can't have a situation where for the rest of the year, we're on such limited options. And I think that's why you've seen Tuchel go to a back four, because as you mentioned with the quotes he gave after Tottenham, I don't have enough bodies, so I'm going to go to a four-back system. So if Emerson comes in, which it does feel a little bit fast quite to pay money for your own player. I mean, it does. We can't deny the humour in that. It does feel very Chelsea being rejected like 3 million for your own player back. I joked with someone the other day that Chelsea are going to end up paying the original fee they paid Roma back in 2018 for him, like 17 million to buy Emerson back. But hopefully that gets done before the end of the window. Because I know Dest has been brought up from Barcelona, and there's Luka Dean obviously went to Aston Villa permanently on 25 million. Maybe, but I'd prefer to wait till the summer to see what else is available if Chelsea want to spend in the market in that area and just stick with Emerson for now.
Yeah, for me too. I don't think Alonso has the stamina that someone like Chilwell has. You know, Alonso can't really play 3 games in a span of 10 mm-hmm. days. So if you're relying on him, especially during that Christmas period, to play many Premier League games during a short span of time, just wasn't going to be the best solution. Right now, I think the most realistic option is, you know, we only have about 17 more days in this January month. You know, time's kicking. It's time's against us. We've already had a rejection so far, but no, they apply back. I think Emerson is probably the most realistic solution for the end of the season, because we are going to be playing so many games and so many competitions. But now I want to transfer this to the PL landscape of things. Of course, it was great to see my most favorite and most energetic Chelsea teams I've seen in the recent games against Liverpool around the new year. So now it seems like hopefully we've taken a step in not being at a top four battle towards the end of the season and being closer to the top than to the fourth place. So I've interacted with a lot of other clubs fans over the past couple of days, and we've been talking a lot about West Ham, a lot about Man United, Spurs, and Arsenal, of course, going forward into that next season. Because there's a lot of competition between those two teams, or four teams right now. But I'm not here to talk about those four clubs today. Because I don't know, we don't have too much time left, but I want to get a little bit into the attack and prowess, because we have seen a little bit of a change of play. Maybe not formation-wise or structure, but it seems like the way that we counterattack, the way that we push up our wing backs and the likes of Hudson-Odoi and interchange them with our number 10s has changed over these past couple of weeks. We've seen more of a two-striker partnership, whether that be Lukaku Havertz, Lukaku Werner, help Pulisic, Lukaku. We have a couple of options there. Going forward, you know, I think people have been so concerned about our midfield situation that at the end of the day is we haven't been scoring many goals, and that's how you win games. So how are we going to be able to get out the best out of these fours? I know it's such a hard question, because there's been so much disappointment from players that we have bought in that are in their primes. Just haven't really succeeded so far at Chelsea. But what do you think provides the best way forward for such an abundance of attackers? There's so much competition, but it doesn't seem like any coming one of them has momentum at the moment. Over the past week or so, there has been some, but still we're not scoring enough goals, in my opinion. And it's like, it's an unfair question to ask you, but what combination, what partnerships are you looking forward to in the next couple of weeks of the season? I guess we can focus on partnerships. I don't want to focus on formations, but what partnerships would you like to see, I guess, going into these next couple of weeks, the Premier League, the international break, and of course, the Club World Cup, and in a few weeks?
I felt that we haven't really seen enough of it this season. We've seen glimpses of it. Callum Hudson-Odoi and Lukaku, with Callum Hudson-Odoi on the left, and you know, obviously Rom, you saw that against Aston Villa. I felt that really worked out, and you know, trying to get the best out of Rom has kind of felt like kind of the biggest attacking question so far this season. I kind of feel like the formation change is starting to answer those questions, at least from what I've seen over the last two games, because the 4-2-2-2 is starting to get Rom into positions that he was getting into Milan. You know, he's able to run at defenders. He's able to, Chelsea are able to turn defenses. He's able to get into that right-hand channel a bit more. He looks like he has a little bit more freedom with his movement rather than that really static centre forward that he was playing all the way up to the West Ham game. I remember doing a piece about that, a Wisecout piece. It was just incredible how static he was. West Ham defended really well that day, but you know, it was just a bit ridiculous to me how static he was, you know, in what was a disappointing day. So it's good to see that, because that's how you're going to get the best out of Rom, the best out of any great striker. I think they need to have a bit of freedom about them to get in and around the pitch. That's why Rom has become a complete striker. It's not just standing in the centre and waiting for the ball to come to him. He could do that, but as Rom has expressed himself, he is much more of a dynamic forward. So I think that's part of it. It's kind of who is going to match with Rom to create the best opportunities, because Rom can create as well, as we saw it Inter Milan. You know, him and Lautaro Martinez formed an amazing partnership, and part of that was fast movement forward in Conte's system in the 3-5-2. It was turning defences. It was Rom getting into that right-hand channel. And with this two up front, I think also with the added element, there's more bodies coming up with them. I think it really helps, because the earlier in the season, if you remember where to start, when Werner and Lukaku originally combined, they were getting isolated from the rest of the team.
That City game really stood out to me.
That City game is the best example, but I mean, Brentford as well wasn't really, Chelsea's attack wasn't really that good. So I feel like, especially when you haven't got Chilwell and James, the creativity, energy those guys bring, I really liked against Spurs how many bodies Chelsea were getting forward and how varied our attacks were. Like, Chelsea weren't just playing the ball out calmly and, you know, comfortably from the back. It was a few passes and then we're trying to hit it long to Lukaku, who can run in behind, or we're hitting it over the Spurs defence that Werner can run in behind. You know, more inventive ways. And I think that's probably what Tuchel wants. So, as I said, I think Callum has had his best season at Chelsea. It's been really refreshing to see the amount of chances he's got on the left side of attack that I just didn't see coming this year, but it's great. Some of that has to do with injuries, of course. I feel more hope for, say, someone like Hakim Ziyech than I did if you'd asked me a month ago, once again, because of this system, because I think it probably offers him the sort of maybe attacking freedom he was getting under Frank before he got injured, if you remember that run after he signed. But the rest of them, I mean, obviously Mason's had a really good goal-scoring season. He's, I think, Chelsea's top goal scorer in the Premier League. Yeah. And, you know, that's another element to his game that people are criticising him for. And just like all the other ones before, he rises to the challenge. Mm-hmm. And you feel like at least he can hit double figures, which I think is big for him. Kai and Timo, I think, have been the two biggest disappointments this season in it from an attacking sense. Kai, because you felt like that Champions League winning goal was going to really take the pressure off his shoulders. And he just hasn't quite moved on from there. I feel like still now there are too many games that drift by him. You know, it's too often that you feel like he's on the edge of a game rather than really dominating it. And I know part of his brilliance is the way subtly he can move into space. And you saw every Champions League winning goal is the best example of it. But still, I'd like to see a bit more from him. But I think maybe there's a bit of difficulty because he was the first choice sort of number nine, and then Lukaku came in, and so he's had to alter his position at time. But with this new sort of system, Lukaku and Havertz as a front two would be really interesting, I think, flanked by Mount, Hudson-Odoi, Pulisic, Ziyech. I think that'd be, I think there's more combinations. If you add another attacker onto the pitch, which Tuchel wasn't doing earlier in the season, I think there's probably more chance of these players succeeding, because there has been a feeling maybe it was actually forced by the wing backs becoming our most productive players on the pitch, was that, you know, there weren't enough players in forward positions like you see for Man City and Liverpool. You know, it feels like at times Chelsea don't flood the box enough for me as a team who should be dominating a lot of games. So I'm excited about that. From an American perspective, it's still, Pulisic is still I feel like if you ask me on Monday, I'll feel positive about him. If you ask me on Tuesday, I might feel more negative about him. I think the most positive thing we can say about Pulisic going into 2022 is that he's fit.
Yep.
He hasn't had an injury for quite a while now. For his standards, that, you know, I'm not trying to be sarcastic, you know, for his standards, that's an encouraging thing. Even if his performances haven't been as impactful, you know, I hope that the goal against Liverpool would have given him real confidence, because he missed that chance early on, messed it up. And of course, a minute later, Mane scores from a similar position. But the way he finished that chance in, at the end of that half, you hope was really big for him. So I don't want to be too negative on this podcast. I think if people go back and listen to the last time I was on this podcast, I think I made it pretty clear, at least one attacker that I was quite disappointed with, and my opinions on that attacker haven't really drastically changed since then. But that doesn't mean that the attack that Tuchel has, which should be clicking, can click for the rest of the season. And I think this new formation actually has a chance to do it.
I think too, it's recognized now that with the loss of our sound wing backs, we're going to have to score more goals to win games. It's not like we can keep clean sheets on a regular basis now. And, you know, the loss of Edouard Mendy hurts us a little bit for a couple games, but I want to give a lot of prop to Kepa, because I think he's had a really nice season. I put some out about him last night. And he's been impressive when he's been called upon, and that's really all we can ask for him. But now, Daniel, it's time to get into the City matchup for this weekend, of course. Another week brings another chance for City to land another blow on one of their Premier League pursuers. And if they beat us, I believe they'd go 13 points clear. And they've won their last 7 competitive matches, scoring an average of basically 3.5 goals per game. So they're putting the ball in the back of the net. Five straight home league wins, I think, now is as well. Their last 2 goals as well, and I think when they played Leicester, and of course they had that Leeds drub in, something like 16 goals in their last 3 Premier League home matches. It is worth noting to say that, of course, we would go to Etihad, regardless of the fans not being there last season, and had a great win. But I will say, more optimism, it doesn't feel like it, Daniel, but we haven't lost a game, of course, since that West Ham match you brought up a little earlier. 5 draws, though, in those 11 matches in the Premier League. You know, we've just seen us fall behind City. Of course, we talked about the Spurs game on Wednesday, giving us some confidence. It seems like, though, we've been conceding late in games recently. After the 75th minute, these guys are fatigued. I think it's something like 4 or 5 goals now after the 75th minute over the past couple weeks. But we, of course, have beaten Pep Guardiola's side through the last 4 head-to-heads. Champions League final, of course, the biggest one. However, just 1 clean sheet in 4 Premier League away games could spell us some danger. Ilkay Gundogan has been a player I think he's really gotten noticed recently. He's scored a lot in Man City's last couple of matches. And then Hakim Ziyech, of course, the player who scored the Etihad last weekend. A hot stat for you is that both City and Chelsea have been trailing at the 15-minute mark just once in the Premier League this term. So these two teams kind of fill these others out, and they hark on them, especially City early on. I think a great example of that, of course, is that Leicester match. They really just hopped on Leicester and made them look a really bad set on Boxing Day. But let's talk a little bit about this match before we wrap up the podcast. I don't know if you can hear that audio in the background, but I'm in my dorm room right now, and there's music outside. So, but hopefully you won't be able to hear that. But if you do, it's okay. But yeah, just some predictions for the game. Maybe who you want to see against City's style of defense. Of course, we're the underdogs going into it, but it seems like Chelsea kind of thrive off that in the past couple of months, especially against a team like Manchester City. It's a huge match. Realistically, I know we have a question about, you know, what is a successful season for Chelsea, and we could probably end it in the podcast with that. But you know, maybe a bold prediction for the game and who you want to see against Pep Guardiola's side and your confidence level going into Saturday's match.
Yeah, maybe it helps the fact that there is maybe lesser pressure on this game on a Chelsea perspective, or at least expectation. You know, if we were going into this game, I don't know, point behind them or level on points with them, I think there'd be a sense that this was, you know, such a massive high stakes game. And as you said, you know, there is a sense that Chelsea at times really do thrive off being the underdog. Tactically, it's already been argued to me by Adam Newsom that because Lukaku played the whole game against Tottenham on Wednesday, Kai Havertz was fully rested. So Kai Havertz will come back in simply because Kai obviously can press a lot more. This was, you know, Kai playing as that nine worked a lot more against City in the Champions League last year. I fully, you know, I can buy that argument. I'm interested to see who you'd play alongside, you know, Kai Havertz in the front three if you aren't going to play Lukaku. You don't start Lukaku in this game, there are going to be headlines about it. There are going to be questions about it. I don't think Tuchel cares about that because I think from a Chelsea fan perspective, you should have confidence by what happened a fortnight ago that he has the control in this situation. And people will obviously, and I think there's a significant amount of people, no matter how good goals, Rom's recent goal numbers are, that they just don't want to see him playing. So I've already noticed that on the timeline during games. Even if Rom does anything decent, he's now the scapegoat, unfortunately. You know, it's kind of moved over from Mason Mount onto him now, sadly, in some corners of social media. But I can understand that tactical point of view because Chelsea back in September got nowhere near Man City. I mean, 1-0 felt like a too slim a scoreline, actually,
might have been,
from what happened.
Honestly, I know this might be a stark statement, but that might have been our worst performance of the season, in my opinion, just because we were so dominated in the midfield, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the tactics, you know, a 3-5, it's a 5-3-2, wasn't it? Where we had three stationary midfielders, very good midfielders in Jorginho, Kante, and Kovacic.
I mean, I love that partnership. But
very much they did, you know, it was too easy for City to pin us back. And Werner and Lukaku got isolated. And actually, that game slightly changed in the second half when Havertz came on and made it a free attack. So there is that. I completely understand that argument. You know, you want to press City from a high point. You don't want them being able to build attacks, especially when we haven't got our first choice wing backs playing. I understand all of those arguments. And, you know, Tuchel will look back to what we did, as I say, against them in the Champions League final, where we weren't the favourites, and do something. I just find it intriguing who he plays around Kai Havertz, because I think you've got a more obvious option for Callum Hudson-Odoi to be part of that front three this year. The argument he doesn't have, I know people will say Werner, but you know, I'm not quite sure that I'd still be starting him in this game. I think Callum Hudson-Odoi is in better form. I think Hakim Ziyech is in better form. I'd even argue Christian Pulisic's in better form. You know, Mason has to be playing this game. He's going to be in the front three. If you want to press, you need Mason in the team. Especially the way he really... I was speaking to a City fan who just was recalling with dread the Champions League final of Mason's movement, particularly for the goal. And the combination him and Kai seems to have, I think, is really good. So Mason's going to be part of the front three. So it's just about, I think, who would partner Kai and Mason if that was the front three that Tuchel goes with. So yeah, tactically, I think it'll be back to the 3-4-3. I don't expect that to change. I think Kovacic and Kante will be the double six. Because as you said earlier, you know, Jorginho got to get a rest. And I think Kovacic is in such good form, looks so sharp at the moment. His attributes are going to be so important in a game like this. Chelsea getting out of pressure. And Kante, obviously, if you can keep him fit. Thiago, Rudiger. And I'd suppose Christensen would be the back three. Christensen or Dave would be in that back three as well. Because Thiago being back is big as well. And you kind of feel like, despite players who've been in and out of the wing-back positions in recent weeks, I still think Dave and Alonso will be the two wing-backs, just because I think that he wants those senior players and would trust them in that game. And really, if you're going to play wing-backs, I mean, you don't have a lot of options. That's once again, that is the big problem that Tuchel's got in the moment. And I'm not quite sure he's ready to play the 4-2-2-2 against Man City. I don't think he feels that that is a system that he feels as comfortable with as he does the 3-4-3, a system that, you know, won this club a Champions League crown. I think in a year's time, maybe, if we get the right players in, he may try a fallback against City. But at the moment, I think he'll just revert to what's worked there. And yeah, we'll have to see what happens. I mean, City are an incredible, incredible team. But, you know, Chelsea faced them last year when they were an incredible team after an incredible run of form, and we did a great job against them. So you can't rule us out. A win here would maybe spark some life into the title race. I think it would spark, you know, a lot of energy into our Premier League season very much. I think it would make us feel that we are, as you said earlier, way away from the Champions League slog, which is so important. And I think it'll be a tense game. I think it'll be a close game, as Chelsea City games are, with Tuchel and Guardiola, how much they respect each other. So those are my thoughts. I'm not as sort of dreading it as maybe other people. And I think maybe some of that has to do with you're kind of resigned to the fact that the title is probably gone. And maybe that helps Chelsea psychologically in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of torn between a Mount Hudson-Odoi and Havertz front three and a Mount Havertz Lukaku front three. I think Hudson-Odoi is a great shout. I just, for me, the concern is if he does cut it on that right foot and he has the opportunity to be clinical, does he take that chance? I'm a little bit more confident in someone like Lukaku in that area, but I agree with you that Hudson-Odoi and Havertz had this great link-up play, and we've seen it over the first year and a half of Havertz's career here at Chelsea. So for me, it's either Hudson-Odoi or Lukaku. I think Mount and Havertz, I think especially didn't play him against Spurs, kind of a clear sign, took Mount off, I think, in like the 60th minute. And he's one of our most important players to this side. And we know how important he is as well when he can track back into the midfield and help out the likes of Kovacic and Conte. And you're probably going to see that a lot in this game. But yeah, it's definitely going to be probably one of our toughest games this season in an atmosphere like the Etihad. Really kick off too. I know it might be a little thin, but it's always takes a game a little bit to get going. We didn't say that against Leicester, but most Chelsea games are as that, especially on the road. But yeah, I just want to thank you so much, Daniel, for coming on the podcast today.
No worries.
This was a lot of fun, man. We got to a lot of talking points. I'm sorry if for Chelsea fans, you know, we didn't get to talk about every single little thing that's happened since I recorded last, because I know it's been a whirlwind over these past couple of months for the Blues as usual. But I just wanted to kind of focus on going forward today and in the future and what Chelsea can do to succeed down the line towards the end of the season. So I guess we'll finish up, Daniel, with the question from Dan Hill. Successful season for Chelsea in your eyes, what is it?
Obviously now winning the League Cup, you know, you get to the final, want to win it. That's another trophy for Tuchel. Win the Club World Cup, you know, that'd be a very historic moment for Chelsea. It's, you know, it's the one title we really don't have. So massive moment for the club. And then, you know, you really want to go as far as you can in the FA Cup because Chelsea got a decent draw in the fourth round. It's a chance to rotate players and maybe finally put right the woes of the previous two seasons of getting to the final and losing somehow. So Chelsea want to put that right. Maybe there's a motivation internally in the squad of putting that right. And the Champions League as well. I mean, Chelsea have got a really good draw against Lille. I mean, I don't want to disrespect Lille, but, you know, in terms of the teams we could have got, Chelsea should be progressing to the last eight. And I think it's just important psychologically, the confidence within the club. Chelsea have to get deep in this competition again to really cement yourself as one of those elite European clubs. I'm not saying you have to win it, because it, obviously we could come up against Bayern in the quarterfinal, who are incredible this season. We come against Liverpool or Man City. You could be knocked out over two legs, obviously. But I don't think many teams would want to face Chelsea over two legs, given what happened last season, given the tactician Tuchel is. So Champions League, it's kind of hard. You know, you're not really thinking about the Champions League at the moment because there's so much focus on other things, and we've sort of forgotten about it since the group stage. But get to the last eight, see how that draw pans out, and then there may be a route once again to the final. And you know, you've got to back there's going to be belief in this squad that they could do it again. There's going to be belief in Tuchel that he could do it again. So as I say, it could be a ridiculous end to the season once again for Chelsea. I do generally think the title is probably gone. Just in terms of success for the, in talk about the league, I think Chelsea have to make sure that gap is not 19 points again.
Yeah.
I don't think it's good. I don't think it's a good look going into the summer feeling like nothing's changed in the Premier League. I think that gap has to be under 10 points. Just because psychologically for the club going into the summer, the feeling that that gap can be overturned and you know, closed within a season. It would make you think that if we go from 19 to 9, you go, okay, we've closed that gap now. Now it's just, can we go the distance? That would be the question I'd want to pose. So that for me is a success. You know, Chelsea reaching 80 points this season, which they could do still, is a massive improvement on recent seasons. I mean, Chelsea haven't reached that level of points since Antonio Conte won us the Premier League. you know, that level of points would be a sense of progression. People don't like that if it means us finishing third, but you have to appreciate that Chelsea have been miles and miles away from the Premier League title in recent years. So it's all about, I think, more baby steps in the Premier League than actual huge strides. But those huge strides can still come in the cup competitions where Chelsea can still dominate.
Yeah, I mean, an average of a 27 points deficit over the past 4 seasons in the Premier League to the league leader. And I think Tuchel's starting to rewrite some of the gaps of the past. I know it might not look that way now, but hell, I mean, if we somehow pull off a win on Saturday, that gap is 7. I'm not saying we have a shot, at least a decent shot. Of course, we still have a chance to really contend for that title. But no, it's all about the confidence factor and the beaten Man City. You know, that Man City are at the summit right now. And if we once again go into Etihad and get a win or even a point of that match, you know, I think going forward, that would be really good for this group. So once again, thanks for the thoughts, Daniel. This was a lot of fun.
No worries.
Some great analysis today. Where can my listeners find your work, Football.London, and also your work for YouTube and in social media?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much I could just throw out all the links, but I do generally think Son of Chelsea on Twitter is really the easiest place because that's where I share all my work. You can get to see all my articles. You can get to my YouTube channel. It's kind of the best place to be, really, if you want to find my work. So at Son of Chelsea on Twitter, and also for my ramblings that no one wants to hear as well.
Yeah, I think Daniel's really good at comparing academy players to some stars of the past. And I really appreciate the article the other day about Broja and Costa, because I think, you know, of course, Cobham, not talking about, we didn't get to really discuss today, but some of our lone players really look bright for the future of the squad. And he's been writing some great pieces on Football.London. So make sure to go support him. The company as a whole are doing some great work. They're kind of taking over the media search in England. And it's been great to see your success. And I'm very happy to hear that you're happy with your job. Just keep up the great work, man, especially with YouTube. I think people have a little bit forgotten about the fact that you still run a YouTube channel. So make sure to go check out his videos as well.
Yeah.
Usually after matches, you know, he's got some really good thoughts. So make sure to subscribe, give him a view, give him some comments when he's asking for questions for his videos, because he's a great guy. And that's what I really appreciate most about Dan. So thank you very much for on the podcast today. You guys can find me on Twitter now at StatmanChain. You could find the Instagram also at StatmanChain. I'm going to try to hopefully put a lot more on Instagram stories in the next couple of weeks. I've been doing a little bit more of that now. Posting, it's just so hard for me because of school. But as much as I can record, I'm going to be. I've been a lot on a lot of Twitter spaces, so you can probably find me on Twitter spaces a lot. I'm hopefully going to be hosting some in the next couple of weeks because it's really hard to schedule podcasts, but you know, people have time for Twitter spaces. So just look out for that. Hopefully I'll be more active on Twitter as well as statistics and my thoughts on the club in general. But really appreciate your guys' support, even though, because I know this was a big layoff from the last episode with Adam Newsom. But thank you guys for staying with us. It's crazy to think about. I've been doing this for over a year now. Time flies. It really does. And just once again, thank you, Daniel, for coming to the podcast today. Appreciate your guys' support. You can find the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts now as well. So just keep up the great support. Daniel, keep up the great work. And until next time, Chelsea fans, let's hope that we can go into the Etihad and put in a respectable performance. And Thomas Tuchel's boots can keep on flying high and towards the spring months and get some trophies on their belt. So until next time, Chelsea fans, stay safe. And up the Chelsea.